So we can start even now. Oh, excellent. Okay, so we get an extra couple of minutes with no extra charge today. And one of the reasons I like coming up here a little bit earlier is again just to relax into the spot here to make sure I'm comfortable and you have a chance to ask for the air conditioners to be sort of toned down a bit so it's not too hot. Because personally I always prefer cooler temperatures to meditate. I know my body can create heat, and if you ever do feel really cold, there's that story which I read in some examples of how monks were trained in the Himalaya mountains. They were trained to meditate and to actually to create heat in their body. And eventually, because when they would go and meditate, they'd meditate in caves or in the snow fields, and there was no heating there, no external heating, so they had to make sure they could survive in very, very cold temperatures. And so that after a while of training, they'd have the final test, almost like an exam. They were taken out into the snow fields in the middle of the night, and they had to sit by a lake. They had to take all their robes off, totally naked, and when the cold winds were blowing across the snow fields in the Himalaya mountains, and just that icy wind and just the cold snow, and they had to endure all night. But they were allowed one blanket, and that blanket was dipped in the icy waters of the lake before it was put around them. This was a story which was told. And once it was put around them in the lake, then they had to dry 3 blankets in the night time, in the 12 hours of night time, to pass the test. And every time I ever feel cold, I always remember that story. And it's amazing, I don't feel cold anymore. When you just see something a bit more extreme. But anyway, that we try not to go to extremes of asceticism when we meditate, which is one of the reasons why we try and make it as comfortable as possible for you. If this was a Tibetan monastery, according to that tradition, I'd have asked Bill to put it onto the cooling mode, minus 16 or something, to test. But those extremes, they don't really work. I know that there was another monk who told me in Laos there was a monastery and had some very good meditators in that monastery, but anyone who wanted to learn how to meditate, they were also given a test, and that test asked them to, they went on a walk, you know, through most of the day in the mountains with the teacher, and you know, they were getting close to the monastery and they were getting tired. And they came to a clearing with these very high trees. And in those trees are little platforms, about the size of these monks' platforms, up on the tree. They had no sort of protective barriers to them, but they did have a bamboo ladder so you could climb up there to meditate. And so every monk had to climb up there to meditate, and the teacher would take away the ladder and say, "I'll be back in the morning." So really tired, up there at a high distance, and to meditate all night. And of course, if you got sleepy, if you had sloth and torpor, you would fall off that platform, and that would be the end of you. And the monk who told me this story, who did do one night up there, told me, he said, "It's amazing. We had no reports of monks dying, because if they fell off, they'd be eaten by the tigers in the forest below." I said, "Of course no one would tell, because they'd be dead. Only the ones who survived could tell the stories." But it's a very dangerous thing to do, and not actually what was recommended. A few Westerners, we heard that story when I was in Bangkok, and there was a big new building made in Wat Bawon. That's a big monastery up in Bangkok, and the monks had the keys, and so a couple of them, I didn't do this, well, went up there at night time, and they sat on the edge of the parapet. And when the head monk saw them, he locked the door and said, "Don't go up there again, because it's a nice thing to think you can do that, but just one little error of sloth and torpor, and that's your dead. And it's also, it's not the way to use fear in order to get some deep meditation. Instead of using fear, which generates control, we use wisdom, a sense of being safe, being comfortable, nothing's going to harm you, so that you can learn how to let go. Remember just what I said about letting go last week. It's letting it happen, not making it happen. You're getting out of the way. And the only way to allow that to happen is you have to feel safe. You have to feel that this is a comfortable thing to do, so you don't have to do anything. Now that many of the monks, many of the people in Perth now are flying again in aircraft, now you think what you're doing there is you're taking off and you're going up into a very high altitude in the aircraft. Anything can go wrong. But if you feel afraid, you can't relax and you can't sort of enjoy the flight. You can't just even meditate because you're afraid every moment. That's one of the reasons why, that because everybody says that flying is one of the safest ways to travel, that's one of the reasons why that you can. Some people can fall asleep when they're flying. Some people can meditate when they're flying. And when you feel safe, then you can relax. And when you can relax, that's where you get some very peaceful states. It's not what you make happen, not what you force to happen. It's just what happens when you can learn how to leave things alone and let go. It is an automatic process. I mention that because this is how the Buddha taught it. An automatic process. When you feel safe, you're at peace, when there's nothing to think about, the mind just doesn't want to think about anything, which means that you can be peaceful. Basically, there's nothing to think. No business, nothing you have to do, nothing which is life-threatening. So you can sit there, and I've seen many people go to sleep when they're in a car. Fortunately, not the driver, but thank you. But it's amazing. How can you fall asleep when you're driving in a car? It must be because the person feels really comfortable in that car. They feel safe. There's nothing to worry about, so they can turn off. And if one can somehow manage to be still and silent and feel safe, then of course the meditation gets much easier. When you think you have something to do, something to achieve, a goal to reach, and if you don't reach that goal, you're going to be in trouble. Of course, that creates stress inside of you, and stress is the opposite of meditation. We meditate to de-stress. We don't sort of meditate, you know, let's go for it this time. This time we're really going to get into it. You try things like that, you get more tense, and you feel more unsafe. And because you feel unsafe, that's one of the reasons why that people start thinking a lot, or start fantasizing, start dreaming, anything to get away from the feeling that you're in danger or you're troubled right now. So when you can create a sort of a bubble of safety around you, then it makes it easier to meditate. Now, I did mention this to a gentleman last night. He's in the back there somewhere. He said, how do you meditate, you know, when you're in busy situations, you're traveling around, even like flying? And I told him that you can imagine a bubble. Use your imagination, because, you know, there are some types of meditation in Buddhism, especially the kasina meditations, where that's how we start, with full-on meditation, full-on imagination of a color inside the mind. But anyway, this is another form of meditation, of when we can just imagine that we're in a nice, safe bubble, nothing can penetrate it, and then we can sit there and have a nice, peaceful place to meditate. And I've done it in several cases. I mentioned to the gentleman that I remember doing that in Suvarnabhumi Airport. I'd arrived early for a conference, and they said, oh, we have another monk coming in an hour's time. It's okay if we can wait for him? I said, of course. I said, I'll just meditate for an hour. But he said, this is Suvarnabhumi Airport, in one of the main concourses. It was very busy. I said, oh, never mind. So I meditated there. And the only way I could do that this very, very busy and very noisy place, was to imagine a bubble around me. And in that bubble it gave me not so much silence, but it gave me the sense of safety and peace. I could sit in there and be apart from all the other people in the concourse. And that worked perfectly well. It's a wonderful little method, and I share that with other people. There are times when it's, again, in a busy place, and if you can, just imagine a bubble around you, and that's your little cave, little place where you can just be and be silent. And it works extremely well. So this is one of the ways you understand the idea of safety is an important part of the meditation. And it's also, I hope that you've known me for many years, that I do know what I'm talking about with meditation. So in all the years I've taught meditation, especially here, never once has anybody died while they're in meditation. Well, I know many times people have healed sicknesses and got much better. So it's a very, very safe thing to do here. I know in some meditation traditions that people do get afraid because some people do go a bit crazy. But those are the meditations where you are told to try. You have goals and you put forth a lot of effort. And of course that type of, when there's effort, there's always success and there's always failure. And that's one of the problems there. You don't feel safe. And a few people who do fail, they think they can't do anything. Sometimes they even put even more effort in and they fail really big. They get tense inside. But of course, those of you who have been here for a long time, or even a short time, if you get the message now, there's nothing to achieve. There's no such thing as failure. All there is just learning how to be peaceful, how to accept this moment, not try and make it somehow different. We care for this moment. We don't try and cure it. So in other words, that we learn how to be with kindness. And those few stories which I keep on coming back to, the most important one here, well, I'll say it only in brief, the anger-eating monster. I think I told that even about a week ago. How do you get rid of anger-eating monsters? You give them kindness. Thank you, monster, for coming to visit me. It's been such a long time since you've been here. Welcome. And when you're kind to monsters, in this story told by the Buddha, they get smaller, less threatening, less violent, which means that they soon get so small they can, one more act of kindness, they vanish completely away. That's how we deal with any problems in our meditation. We just are kind to them and they leave. That's happened so often, and I've taught it so often, that it's a very powerful part of psychology. If you have any difficulty in meditation, don't think it's an obstacle. Seeing it's something which has come to teach you. And unless you stop and care for it and listen to it and hear what its message is to you, then it will keep coming back again and again and again. It's one of the reasons even yesterday I was at a lunch dana with the bhikkhunis, and Venerable Anālaya has got this tiny alms bowl. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a small thing. And I said, I can put your alms bowl in my alms bowl. The whole alms bowl can fit in very easily. And I said why I had my alms bowl. It was because it was given to me by a French monk. And I always keep that as a reminder because, you know, I was slightly senior to him, only about 1 year. He would never talk very much, but he was like a perfect meditator. I never once would see him do any nodding. He looked so still and so calm for hours. But then he disrobed and he gave me his alms bowl. And I said, no, how come you disrobed? Your meditation looks so much better than mine. And he said, yes, Ajahn Brahm. He said, sometimes in my meditation I'd open my eyes and see you nodding. And I was jealous of you. He said, I wish I could do that. He was a control freak. And he would not let himself sort of feel sleepy at all. And over the 3 years when he was a monk, he got more and more tense, more tight inside, until he couldn't stand it any longer. And he would not let anybody else know what was going on inside of him because he was embarrassed about letting people know what was happening. So that's often with a control freak. You're trying to impress others rather than trying to understand how you work. So I keep that alms bowl and memory of him, and to remember him that he may look really perfect on the outside, but inside it was so tight. And realize that's not the way to do meditation. Meditation is we learn how to understand our body and our mind. When it comes to teaching something, we don't say, this must be wrong. We stop, listen, we care for the teaching. And we learn from it, and it disappears. I was just mentioning about that sleepiness. One of the reasons I was very sleepy when I was a young monk, because what can you expect? I was only sleeping about 4.5 hours a night. Because Ajahn Chah said you shouldn't sleep very much. And this was, you know, in the tropical climate of northeast Thailand, really hot, very muggy, no air conditioners or fans or anything. I wasn't used to that. And I was malnourished. I told all the stories about the one meal a day, sometimes just sticky rice and a frog on top, and that was it. So I was malnourished, tired, in a climate which I found very difficult. But then what happened? That I remember going down to Bangkok and sitting meditation in an air-conditioned room in the morning. And it was so easy to meditate, simply because you could adjust the temperature. I was in Bangkok eating much more healthy food, and I could sleep a little bit extra. It was much, much more comfortable. So because of that, I realized, like, my sloth and torpor was not a personal problem. It was just caused by the situation around me. And that was one of the first, and the cause is beyond my control. That was one of the first times I realized this meditation, don't take it personally, is a cause and effect happening here. And if you can arrange the causes, then the effects which you're trying through willpower to overcome disappear by themselves. Just having that comfort, you know, that enough coolness, enough, and not too much food in your belly, but just the right amount. You felt sort of energized, clear-minded. And that really helped enormously. So as we do meditate, you find many insights come. When things go wrong, they haven't gone wrong. This is just how we learn. We learn just what causes the mind to be restless. Why do you think so much? You look at it from a perspective, you don't need to think anything during the meditation. You know, honestly, I give all these talks, say a lot, but I don't think before I speak. This is weird, but it's just totally automatic. I've given so many talks on meditation, I don't need to think what I'm going to say. In fact, my mind is quite quiet when I talk, believe it or not. And so, that when you know and trust that automatic part of the brain and let that happen, you don't have to think, you don't have to judge. That's the other part. I don't know why we're so judgmental. Was that a good meditation? Was that a bad meditation? Bear Metaji? No, come on. Who knows?
Who knows? Go back, who knows?
Who knows, yeah. He just taught that book before I came in here. So that's one of the great things about that book. It's Don't Worry, Be Grumpy was the American version. Same inside, but the cover was different. So the good, bad, who knows? What does that mean? You can't judge. So do you judge your meditation? Was it a good meditation? A bad meditation? Who knows? Even when you think it's just hopeless meditation, just thinking or dull all over the place, you learn a lot from it. You don't judge it. You make peace with it. You know that saying? Make peace. Be kind, be gentle, which that was Eddie Cooper that in front of here. It's a beautiful word, and that's how we meditate. We don't fight, we learn. And little by little, the understanding of the wisdom becomes really strong. When that wisdom comes strong, you understand there's nothing wrong with you. It's just you keep on sitting there, give yourself the time, and the opportunity, and peace will come. It always does. So don't ever think that you can't meditate. You've interfered too much with the meditation rather than letting it happen. Just like somebody was asking me, though, my first meditation teacher, one of the stories he always would say, and if you've heard his story elsewhere, this is where it came from. He said his father gave him these little seeds to plant in the garden in Bangkok. And he planted those seeds, but he was only a small fellow, 7 or 8 years of age. He got very impatient. When are those flowers going to rise above the surface of the earth? They're coming, give them time. And then one day he could see the little shoots above the ground, and he started watering them twice a day. He was so impatient. And then after a couple of weeks, he really lost his patience. And that's when he decided to stretch them to make them grow faster. And of course, you can't stretch a plant, you just kill it. So he killed every one of them, but he learned a good story from that. Things in life you cannot stretch, you cannot make it happen faster than the nature allows. And that's with meditation as well. You learn how to protect the mind, to nurture it, not to harm it. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Be gentle with the meditation, and then it grows. You have a beautiful garden. And you have that beautiful garden because it runs according to nature, not according to your schedule. So take your will out of the equation and just learn how to allow the meditation to happen. People say, that's ridiculous, Ajahn Brahm. If I don't do anything, nothing will happen. Check it out. It's amazing just how nothing becomes so beautiful, so aware, so penetrating. Okay, I can't resist this. I almost said it the other day to the monks. How that when you're very still and peaceful, you sit there and you get into some nice meditations, afterwards you can see beauty where you could never expect it before. You know what's coming. I had to go to a toilet after a nice meditation. When I went to the toilet to do a number two, I made a big mistake. If you had a good meditation, please never do this. If you go to the toilet, don't look at the contents of the bowl. So I looked at it, and there was the most beautiful piece of feces I've ever given birth to in my life. It was gorgeous. And I was honest. I'm a monk, I don't exaggerate. Well, when I tell a joke, I exaggerate sometimes. But this was not a joke, this was real. And to this day, it blows my mind that you could look at a piece of feces and it looked gorgeous. Why? It's because your mind was so peaceful and still, it could see things which were blocked from other people. And that was just showing us what's possible in meditation. So little by little, well, I'm not supposed to say that word. As we meditate more and more, I said little by little, more and more, same thing, isn't it really? Anyway, as you meditate, we meditate, all these wonderful things happen. They come from stillness, not from willpower. Or wisdom power, as I sometimes call it. That's the juice which runs the engine of meditation. Wisdom power. So anyway, I've talked enough. So let's now do some meditation. Sorry, I've got to correct myself. We're not going to do any meditation. We're going to get out of the way and let meditation happen. So here we go. Oops. So we sit down and become aware of our body. To relax it to the max. To make peace with your body. Be kind to it. And always be gentle with this body which looks after you day and night. How are your legs positioned? Feel your legs. If you wish, you can scan from your toes up to your thighs, and then back down again. Just checking every part of it is in a good position. Sometimes you have to look carefully, deeply, to be able to notice that maybe some part of your legs which aren't in a good position. So you have to adjust it. It's not just noting what's happening, it's actually doing something about it if it's possible. And I've noticed over these years that sometimes you move your body slightly, you adjust it, but a lot of times all you need to do is put some energy down there, some attention and some kindness, and the kindness tends to relax everything and the body becomes at ease. You can't expect it to be at ease without you being aware and having this kindness. A lot of times I figured out the reason why kindness works is because it gives you also the sense of safety that something is looking after you, and that's you. So you can relax, you don't have to tense up and protect yourself. So everything comes at ease. The reason I start with my legs is because there's nothing too crucial down there, so I can build up the power of awareness and kindness on my feet, ankles and legs and knees and thighs. So by the time it gets to my torso, the mindfulness and the kindness are pretty much awakened and they are in reasonable good shape, enough to be able to be aware of my torso, my back. I'm sure you've had some sicknesses in your path. I injured my back very badly once, laying concrete. But now I can feel that back, and it feels really good. And when I get to know these parts of my body, it's like we work together as a team. I don't own my back, it's my partner. And my body just told me, just please stretch me. That's how it felt. That I took the advice of my body, it needed a stretch, so I do that. And I checked all the organs in my torso. Just like run through up to the, from the bottom to the top. And if I ever find anything which is aching or tight or hurting, it's not that hard just to focus in on there, to give it the feeling of safety and kindness. And that part of the body just relaxes. The worst thing about when you scan through your body is if you're paranoid and you think, oh, this is an ache, oh, this is monkeypox. I caught it from the monks. People have all these sort of fears, but please feel safe. And when I get to the top of my body, get to my shoulders, I don't know why, but they always feel a bit tight. But now when I'm looking at them, it's easy to adjust them so they relax. Here they go, they're relaxing. As I'm describing honestly the feelings in my shoulders, they feel nice and loose now. It's about as best I can get them. So I go down my arms to my hands. Today I'm meditating with my hands apart. Feels okay, so I'm going to leave it there. I just check. I don't have theories which I try and impose upon my posture. I just let the body decide. It's like using intuition. Today maybe this is where my hands need to be. And once my arms are relaxed, I go again to my head, balance it on top of the neck so the neck feels without any tension. And then my head, especially the face, relaxing all the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. The reason I just look at that part of the face is you're not supposed to have any nerve endings inside your brain. So you're not supposed to be able to be aware of your brain. But I know if there's any emotional tension, it plays out on your face very often. So by relaxing my face, I relax the emotional world. And when my mind feels, even just in relaxing the emotional world, you're already letting go a lot of the past and letting go of the future. Because that makes the eyebrows furrowed. It just gives you the sense of worrying about something, which is visible by the configuration of the muscles on your face. So when you relax those muscles, you relax the emotions. You're starting to work on the mind. It's always another part of meditation, but it's a fascinating part, how your mental world does affect, it manifests in feelings in your body. And sometimes the best way to overcome such things as anxiety is to actually notice how it manifests on your body and relax that. So then I'm aware of the muscles on my face, relax them all. And then last but not least, imagine, just feel the whole body. Instead of in parts, instead of scanning, just this one image of your whole body sitting here, ready for meditation. And I enjoy this moment, as I've often said. To me, I delight in it. My body is comfortable. Comfortable enough, it doesn't need to be moved. It's a big burden always having to scratch this or to move that, to cough or to move your eyelids. Now everything is pretty comfortable. The only thing I need to move now is my mouth because I'm still talking with you. Other than that, everything is lovely and relaxed. And I always, every time I notice a pleasure in physical relaxation. And I do indulge in it because it's a mirror of what's going to happen later. The delight of a relaxed mind. When your mind is peaceful in this moment, not thinking too much, your mind feels delight. In the meditation we call it piti sukha. It's real. And it makes meditation delightful. So delightful you look forward to it when you know how to do it. It's like watching your favorite movie or something, or you're listening to your favorite piece of music. In this case, the music of silence. The movie of stillness. So I feel my whole body, it feels delightful. Now I go into my mind. I still got to focus on peace. What is peace? Peace means you're not moving. It's a form of stillness. And peace should be satisfying. When it's satisfying, you delight in peace of mind. You don't need to think about it. Please don't try and be an expert in meditation. In other words, know all the words and describe it to others. Just know it and enjoy it. Words will come later. Feel the peace of meditation. Don't try and take notes. Many experiences you can't keep. Trying to hold on to them, you lose them. Leaving them be and they stay. So now just watching the peace in the mind. Not trying to describe it or keep it. I'm not trying to get the intellectual insights. I'm going for the emotional insights. the experience of peace, the experience of enjoyment inside, the experience of present moment awareness and inner silence. I feel safe. I don't need to give things names. And hopefully you can all feel some peace and the delight, the joy, the positive nature of peace and silence. Things like the breath will come up soon by themselves. When they do come up, it's a perception of the breath. The breath is always there. When a perception of the breath come up, just allow yourself to settle with it. It's like you hold the hand of the breath, and the breath holds your hand. As you walk together, moment by moment, just one breath at a time, one part of the breath at a time, enjoying each other's company, not talking with yourself, but feeling the happiness of relaxation to the max. I'm going to be quiet now until close to the end of the meditation. It's getting close to the end of the meditation now. How peaceful is this? And how does it feel? Just to enjoy the piti sukha, even if it's only a small amount, of a peaceful mind, the relaxed body. Know all that was needed. Wish you to get out of the way, to allow things to happen, and let the body become still, and the mind become peaceful. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times as usual. When the last ringing of the gong begins to fade away, that's a signal to come out from the meditation. Okay, I enjoyed that. Yeah, please. Is there any questions from the floor? Okay. Yes. Here we go.
How do you get the body to generate heat?
Sorry?
How do you get the body to generate heat?
Well, I don't really try that here, because it was quite warm for me today. So if you really wanted to, you really focus on even like a part of the body, just focus on your wrist or your arm, and focus and imagine it getting warm. And as you imagine it getting warm, you may even notice sometimes it gets more red, it actually does get more warm. And it's using the mind to actually to interfere with the body and to get warmth coming up. It can be done, but I haven't really practiced that. I know one monk who was staying over in the monastery in the UK when it first opened. This was almost 40 years ago now. And he was very cold in that monastery. And so he wrote to this Tibetan monk friend, actually, how do you do this to be able to create heat in your body? It'd be very helpful. And his friend said, listen, it's like asking a car salesman who sells a whole car, can you please buy just a heater? It's a nice answer. But it can be done, just need to focus and continue. Have that confidence it can be done. And after a while it's done. It's your own body, it's not that hard to do. Okay, let's do some from overseas. From Las Vegas. How can I become more content and not pursue pleasure and entertainment so much? Now, Las Vegas is a big city. I went in there once. I never saw the strip at all. There's a lady who, she was a doctor, and she, even though she was a doctor, a Sri Lankan doctor, she had a practice in Las Vegas and running a medical center there. But unfortunately, for the best work in the world, she could not save her brother, who got very sick, and he died. And she said that the teachings which you give from here actually stopped her from being depressed and committing suicide. And out of gratitude, she invited me over when I was in the United States to go to Las Vegas just to give a few talks. So it's not just all pleasure over there. Some people doing some wonderful work. And how can I practice more contentment? Do we need to practice meditation every day as much as you can? Do you need to eat every day? Of course you do. You can go on a fast, but you do need to roughly to eat every day. And the point is that you'll seek entertainment if you don't have any pleasure anywhere else. People will go and gamble just for the... Apparently people told me it's not actually for the fun of winning, it's just for that feeling, just when they put down the bet and they just don't know whether they're going to win or lose, but that excitement, they feel alive at that point. So it's just that pleasure, not of winning or losing, but just of being really alive. It's an important matter for them in that moment. But if you can get some better pleasures, like even the pleasures of just going out into the beach and just having a walk by the beach, or seeing nature in the oceans or on the forests, they are actually, after a while, you get to be more sensitive to those and realize they're far more beneficial to you. And also just eventually the pleasure of peace and silence. Sensory pleasures are quite stimulating. And then when we learn how to lessen the stimulation, become more peaceful, it's a much more beautiful pleasure. Just in my life, you know, my own experience, I used to like very heavy rock music when I was young, a teenager, you know, Jimi Hendrix and stuff. And then afterwards I really got into more classical music. It was actually more satisfying to me. And after classical music, then you got into the music of nature, being up in the mountains somewhere, or seeing, or just sitting by a stream when it was just tinkling over the rocks in the valley. You could spend like hours there. It was much more delightful than listening to, you know, even a great symphony orchestra. And then eventually learning the beautiful sound of silence. Just sitting there, nothing was happening. It was so calm, so peaceful. So different types of stimulation. And I think I mentioned this to people at the dharma I went to yesterday, that I think it was how I mentioned it, that when we were doing, you know, monks, we're not allowed to really get into music, we're not allowed to sing. But then once, one of our members was a fundraiser for the nuns' monastery, the Bhikkhuni monastery, and she's a very good supporter. It was actually, many of you might know her, Ming Kasim. And she took out this check made out to the nuns' monastery to $10,000. A lot, a big donation. And she said, "Ajahn Brahm, I will give this donation to the Bhikkhuni monastery if you will sing a song." I said, "I can't do that, it's against my rules." He said, "Well, then no $10,000 donation." And so I said, "Can I choose a song?" She said, "Yeah, whatever song you like." And so I chose the song and I got the $10,000. You know what the song was? Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence. Ajahn Brahm's version. I never sang a word. And I called that the Sound of Silence. And she paid up. It was for the nuns' monastery. She knew she'd been outwitted, so she gave in. So contentment is just seeing the joy and the happiness, real joy, not excitement, not stimulation, but the joy of peace. What more do you want in the world? And when you can notice that, just like the joy of the body when it's relaxed, the delight, is sometimes people can't feel that. They need stimulation, just massage or something to get their bodies to be happy. But my body, when it's just really relaxed, it feels so nice. When the mind is not thinking, it's just really still and just absorbing. That's just so gorgeous. And that's when you can see just the joy in just the contents of a toilet bowl. So you're content even looking at toilet bowl. No, I can't say because I come. I jump on. So do as much meditation as you can, but the meditation should be relaxation. Not forcing the mind, not trying to achieve another thing, but learning how to be peaceful. And feeling the joy of peace, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. From Borneo, if we are difficult in meditating, like many regretful thoughts about past, not feeling belong anywhere, what and how should we put effort on? Don't put effort on anything, for goodness sake. You have regretful thoughts about the past, be kind to those thoughts. about the past. Because when you're kind, you can't criticize yourself, you can't criticize others. Like regret, guilt, bad feelings about the past, you've made a judgment. And I remember years and years ago, so how can I stop being angry? Because some of the things which people do in this world are almost unforgivable. But then I realized that I was judging someone. When I judged someone, it was like a trial in my mind. And I was the judge, and I was the prosecutor. And there was no defense attorney. It was an unfair trial. I'd think about that person, they'd hurt me, they'd treated me badly, and then I was a prosecutor and I was also the judge, I bang, so I meant guilty. I was trying to justify my anger. But then I decided to have always a defense attorney speak up. But you know, they may have been in a bad mood that day, I may have misunderstood them, I may have not really had the full picture of what happened. Maybe they had been suffering so much in the past. All those sorts of things I took into account. And every time I tried to judge somebody who'd upset me, I realized I had always had to give an open verdict, as they say. I couldn't prosecute them. So the judge inside my brain never sort of closed the hammer on the trial and said guilty. I can never justify my anger. So when you're kind and give people the benefit of the doubt, you find the regretful thoughts just don't come up. They're more interesting thoughts and don't belong anywhere. You all belong. This is one of the reasons why people who are damaged goods, I said this even last night, and you feel you're damaged goods, you're like the trees in the forest which have been burnt by the forest fires, they've been sort of bent over by the strong winds, they have been damaged by all sorts of reasons in the forest, the real forests of even Borneo especially. And so you look at those trees, they sometimes become the most gorgeous trees. Please know that they all belong. The forest would not be the same without them. In fact, they become the most beautiful trees. The straight, unaffected trees, they don't seem like they belong. They're too perfect. You know, it's like they're being planted and just protected by the government agencies and stuff. So instead, just the bent, twisted trees, they're the best. So if you have regretful thoughts and you don't feel like you belong anywhere, yes, of course you do belong. You talk with other people in the world and you find you belong so well. Anyway, Singapore question. Last night you shared, instead of not wanting the discomfort of body, we go deep in to look at the discomfort. How to go about deep in? What do we look at? How do we send loving kindness to our body? I think I remember what I was saying there. You have some discomfort in the body. So a lot of time we don't like to look at it because it's painful. We tend to look in the other direction, trying to get rid of it, trying to go to a place where you can't feel that discomfort. But sometimes that just makes you too tense, trying to run away from something. So instead you just allow yourself to go inside, go into it. Just like you focus on something. You focus, see what's in the center of things. That's always a juicy part of life, the center of something. When you actually go into the center of like a discomfort, sometimes like what Ajahn Chah said, it was like going into the center of a storm when he had malaria fever. Went right in the center of it, and it was always cool in the center. You know, the eye of a storm is always still. And anyway, right in the center there, he could feel though the heat build up and build up and build up of his fever. And then it got so hot it exploded. That's what he said. And that was the last time he had malaria fever. So it worked for him. Sometimes I've done that. You go right into the center of something. And from the inside, you just give it some kindness. It's like radiating kindness. Instead of trying to penetrate something, go into the center and it radiates from the middle and goes out. And that tends to get rid of a lot of aches and pains and discomforts. And after a while, I think it was the Buddha who said, I forget how much, like 9/10 of pain. There's two types of pain, two arrows or darts, the mental arrow and the physical arrow. You know, you get a discomfort. There's something there, some physical distress, but it's also the way we react to it. That's a mental dart. He said that's the most of any pain or discomfort. It's how we react to it. And giving it some kindness, and it doesn't feel as painful at all. Anyway, I should go on here. Indonesia. During my meditation, my body feels lighter and the body upright by itself. Great. Oh, this is good. Then I see a light yellow-green mix with grey clouds moving everywhere. Is it a nimitta or a fake nimitta? That's the beginning nimittas. So you feel lighter body upright by itself. That means you're letting go and it's happening. A light yellow-green mix with grey clouds moving everywhere. Is it a nimitta or a fake nimitta? No, it's a nimitta. So well done, but it's not really stable yet. It's not powerful, but it's a good start. The nimitta is just where the body is vanishing and the mind is taking over. And these are little visions in the mind. So what I told someone about this recently, when this is happening, you see a nimitta, see if you can also focus on the most beautiful part of that nimitta. Lots of things happening there, light yellow-green mix with grey clouds moving everywhere. See if you can focus on the most beautiful part of that scene. I remember years ago when I saw this nimitta, very clear. For me, that was a complicated nimitta, not a deep one, but it was like a country scene, of like nice rolling hills and a river in the bottom of the valley and some trees. But I did notice on one of the leaves of one of those many trees, there was a little sparkle, it was a dewdrop. And the dewdrop was sparkling in the early morning sunshine. And I don't know why I did this, but it was a very good thing to do. You just allowed yourself to be drawn to that little sparkle, the most beautiful part of that scene. It's only a tiny part of that scene, but I zoomed in on it, like you had a camera and you focus in on it. And as I zoomed in on it, that little sparkle got just really big and became this wonderful nimitta. So if you have a complicated nimitta like that, grey clouds moving everywhere, see if you can focus on something which is still, on something which is beautiful. Just allow the mind. The mind will love to do that because it's much more joyful. And see what happens. Last question. After an operation on my lungs, my meditation is not the same anymore. I used to find stillness, but now I get stuck with scanning the body. Hardly go beyond. Am I impatient? Yeah, we're all impatient. but that's not a big problem. You got a lot of stillness before, so maybe don't spend so much time on your body. See if you can just allow the body to get as peaceful as it can. You've had an operation, there's a lot of healing necessary. And after a while, just the lungs may not be that good to meditate with, I mean the breath, but you don't have to always be on the breath, you can be just on peace and stillness. And see if you can allow that part of the body to vanish. What happens with the body? It just disappears after a while. It's as comfortable as you can be, and there's more interesting things taking your attention. Just like just peace itself. What does peace feel like? What does stillness feel like? You get to know it. Don't give it words, but just know the feeling, the sensation. And just allow the mind to settle on that. The mind can only settle on things which are attractive, which are beautiful, which give rise to some delight. And after a while, there's so much delight in the meditation, you find something beautiful there. And when you do, then you find you become still. So anyway, thank you for those from Germany. A good selection today from Las Vegas, Borneo, Singapore, Indonesia and Germany. And one question from Australia, so thank you. Any more questions before we finish off? Yeah, Ben?
I've never heard you mention casino meditation before.
Yeah.
Do you think that is a worthwhile pursuit?
Sometimes it's worth doing, but unless it comes really naturally to you, trying to work with it and develop it is quite difficult. The only person who I ever knew who developed that, he had a sort of a natural ability on that. He was actually just on a train, I think here in Perth. And there was like an advert which had lots of blue colour on it. He just got drawn into that and focused on that and got a beautiful nimitta, a very powerful blue nimitta. He's still alive, but he's a bit sick now. He should have died years ago, but he's still going. But he's the only one I know who's really got some benefit out of that. Other people is, well, we can't do the breath meditation, that never worked. We try Vipassana meditation, that didn't work. So now we try Kasina meditation. And you'll find it doesn't really matter what type of meditation you do, it's how you do it. So just make peace, be kind, be gentle. And then any meditation you do, you just usually, and patience obviously, and it gets very wonderful and lovely meditation. So thank you for that anyway. So, oh, you got a question? Okay, go on.
It's not really a question, just to say that the Kalyana Friendship Community is on at 5 o'clock. And I've cooked a massive pot of soup. There's no reason why we can't eat soup before KFC. So come and join us in the kitchen.
It's KFS. Kalyana Friendship Soup. Okay, so thank you for that. So now we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Just also to announce, because that hasn't really been announced that much, there is a Sutta class on Sunday. From 3 to 4:15 or 4:30, depends. Okay, so let's pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Is it okay? You keep asking. Oh, yes. This is so complicated. No, come on.